Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 metre peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, I'm James Reynolds. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. And this time, we hear from students across America about life on campus during a turbulent time of political protest over what's happening in the Middle East. It started with one protest against Israel at a university a couple of weeks ago and has now spread to multiple campuses across America. The trigger is what's happening thousands of miles away, Israel's military campaign in Gaza. In one of our conversations, Jewish students share how they have been treated in class.
Long story short, I actually took the exam in a different section than I normally would have. That has happened to sometimes where I've sat down and someone got up and walked away.
From Columbia University in New York to Yale and to universities in California, Texas and Georgia, and spreading to about 20 different states within a few days, the voice of protest has been heard across the country.
We want Emerson College, number one, call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Number two, to disclose all financial investments in Zionist organizations. Number three, to divest from those organizations. Number four, to drop all charges against students for disciplinary actions.
The only violence that happened at our university was the violence from the police on innocent, peaceful protesters. The police showed up with riot gear, armored vehicles, military weaponry, assault rifles, shotguns, pepper spray, choppers flying overhead, and a sniper on the roof.
It's very sad to see that some people cannot protest peacefully. I think it's for a great cause. These students are here to speak their voice and speak for people that aren't able to and actually stand up for something that they believe in. So it's a beautiful thing, but at the same time, I wish that it was kept peacefully.
We showed the world, we showed the campus what the true colors of UTD administration is, what the true colors of the state of Texas is. And their true colors is that they are willing to violently arrest their own students, students who pay tuition, accomplished students on scholarships. If they think a repression is going to slow them down, I have bad news for all of them. They're only going to get stronger from here.
As you can hear, many of those protesting have felt the force of the police. There have been hundreds of arrests as officers have attempted to dismantle the tented encampments that have been set up in campus grounds. Unsurprisingly, a lot has been captured on video and footage has travelled around the world on social media. Two of those involved in the pro-Palestinian protests are Asmer, a student at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Cameron, a student at Columbia University. We brought them together to discuss their experiences, and we spoke, I should say, amid the heightened emotion of the police raids. Cameron, who we'll hear from first, witnessed the police operation at Hamilton Hall, an eight-story building with a history of staging protests dating right back to the peace movement against the Vietnam War in 1968.
I was standing outside of occupied Hamilton Hall when dozens of police in riot gear were marching in through campus. There was a lot of commotion. Students were running around, screaming, fearing for their safety. And once police arrived outside Hamilton Hall, the couple dozens of students, press, medics, and legal observers were all pushed into nearby buildings. And we were barricaded inside for 3 hours. And a student was pushed down the stairs and was left unconscious for multiple minutes. As this student was screaming for a medic, there was no help because the medic was trapped inside a barricaded building.
You saw this?
Yeah, and I have footage. There was also students who were tased, and there was a smoke bomb that went off. So it was just a very, very violent arrest of peaceful protesters.
You'll understand that there'll be a lot of New Yorkers who see it a different way, who will see that the police were attempting to regain control of a university building. The protesters don't own that building. At some point, the university authorities were going to take it back.
With all due respect, 34,000 individuals have been murdered in Gaza. So it does not matter who owns what building. What matters is that our university is funding a genocide and has continued to suppress student activism for the past 6 months.
You were able to protest outside without occupying buildings?
We were able to protest outside without occupying buildings, yet students were still arbitrarily suspended, and the university was not willing to negotiate their complicity in genocide at all.
Just to add that as you describe what Israel has carried out as genocide, Israel denies that charge. I want to bring in Asmer, a student in Harvard. What's going on at Harvard right now?
So the Harvard encampment is situated right in the middle of Harvard Yard, which is the oldest part of Harvard College, and in the center of the Harvard University, starting right in front of University Hall, which is where the university administration and its offices are located, all the way to Massachusetts Hall, which is where the president's office is located. And as of today, we have over 50 tents that are right in the middle of Harvard Yard.
Asma, you'll know better than me, because you're at Harvard, that one of the big points of debate has been that a number of Jewish students have felt threatened, not just by an encampment, but by some of the slogans that have been chanted. Do you understand the fear that some Jewish students will have felt?
Perhaps, yes, but also at the same time, it's very important to focus attention on the fact that so much of our encampment currently is comprised of Jewish students.
Of course. I'm just talking about other students who are not part of the encampment.
Look, I think this argument of safety has been weaponized against us in so many ways and in so many different fashions over the course of the last 6 months. And I think it's very important to state that any chant and any slogan and any idea that we're trying to propagate can inevitably and will inevitably, by the right-wing media, by individuals that are on this campus, by people that have been doxing us, be mischaracterized and misinterpreted.
Do you understand that it's scary for them to hear some slogans
also,
that they... I'll just finish my point, when they hear those slogans, they take those to be a call for Jewish people to be expelled from the Holy Land.
And I think that's a gross misinterpretation of anything that people are trying to say here. And I think that there's a lot of ways in which forces across the United States, the pro-Israel lobby, have been working towards disparaging the student-run campaigns, and not even the student-run campaigns, but any campaign to speak on behalf of pro-Palestine representatives. That context inevitably goes missing from interviews like this one.
Let's go back to Cameron, who's in New York. You're in campus housing, I should say, at the moment. What's going on right now?
So I wanted to address your earlier points about anti-Semitism. I am actually a Jewish student on Columbia's campus, and I'm an organizer with Jewish Voice for Peace. I am descended from individuals who fled the Holocaust, and I find this line of questioning extremely problematic because there have been dozens of Jewish students on Columbia's campus who have been deeply involved.
And I said that with Asmed. I said I wasn't talking about the Jewish students who were involved in the encampments. I was talking about the ones who aren't.
With all due respect, Bethany, I wasn't finished. Including on our encampment that lasted about 10 days, we had dozens of Jewish students who were not involved with activism previously attend our Passover Seder, attend our Shabbat services, and we have widespread support amongst large swaths of the Jewish students at this campus.
No one's denying that. I was just talking about the other students who weren't involved.
Okay, so yes, we can talk about the other students who have harassed me verbally, who have given me death threats, who have doxed me on Canary Mission, and who are weaponizing anti-Semitism to distract from an ongoing genocide that our university is complicit in. And I commend my comrade in Harvard for speaking so well earlier. And I really want to acknowledge that there is an unfortunate conflation of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism that is happening. Using chants that are anti-Zionist is not anti-Semitic.
Do you make a difference in your mind between the right to protest and the right to disrupt? Because some universities have made a real difference, saying, of course, people have the right to free speech and to protest, but not to disrupt other students.
Again, with all due respect, if you look at any protest or activist movement over the past 200 years, the civil rights movement, the movement against apartheid in South Africa, and many other social movements, disruption is the key part of that. So again, it is very concerning to hear you so flagrantly.
I'm just, how
do you think the civil rights movement happened?
What I'm quoting to you is what some universities have expressed in recent days, which is part of the debate that of course we do want to reflect on this network. Let's go back to Asmed in Harvard.
Listen, it's very important to just state that if any of these university presidents and the members of the administrations had family in Gaza right now, or had individuals that were being subjected to brutal violence currently. I don't necessarily think that they would be entertaining debates about whether protest counts as disruption or vice versa. I think the idea would be to act. And I'm speaking as a person that is from Pakistan. I'm an international student from there.
Yeah.
I've had seen my country ravaged by American drone attacks and the civilian casualties that have happened. And I know that I have a duty to act when I'm here, when I have people that are counting on me, similarly to the way in which a lot of Palestinian students think, and similarly to the way in which a lot of other communities that are allied with the cause think. I think our common humanity currently is being disparaged continuously on mobile screens, is being viewed online, is being viewed on television screens. And the fact that people still think that, like, this sort of nuanced approach towards what protest and what free speech looks like currently is going to be entertained. I think the one fundamental premise that we need to answer for ourselves as individuals that are listening to this and individuals that are participating in these protests themselves is very simply, where else does this grief and where else does this anger go?
Student protesters Ahmed at Harvard and Cameron at Columbia University. And the president of Columbia University said it was with regret that she called for the police raid against the students and others who'd infiltrated the protest, and added that it would take time to heal. At a news conference, the commissioner of the New York Police Department, the NYPD, Edward Caban, produced a heavy-looking chain and said that protesters had tried to lock his officers out of the building at Columbia University, adding that they would never allow that situation to happen. And US President Joe Biden acknowledged that students do have the right to protest, but not, as he put it, to cause chaos. He said that peaceful protest was in the best tradition of the United States, but added that order must prevail. I'm James Reynolds. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations from the BBC World Service.
Up there, you have to be quick to make decisions because it's not a natural environment for survival.
Five incredible women. Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
I risked my life many times
to be the first to climb all 8,000-meter peaks.
I had to finish it, accomplish it.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
For some Jewish students, the impact of the protests has been felt. They say they've been intimidated and that they faced abuse on campus. Ariana, Eliana, and Melissa are Jewish students at the University of Columbia, and we brought them together to share how they are feeling. And just to warn you, unsurprisingly, in a conversation which is about the topic of harassment, our guests describe some of the verbal abuse that they have experienced, which includes the suggestion of offensive language. The first voice you'll hear is that of Ariana.
I am a firm believer in free speech and academic freedom and people's right to advocacy. I don't think there's a problem using civil disobedience as part of your advocacy, but that means also getting arrested. That is part of civil disobedience. So I really don't take issue with that. I take issue with this movement trying to characterize itself as a continuation of an anti-war or a peace movement. I don't think you get to do that when for the last, you know, few months since October 7th, you have been glorifying and supporting terrorist organizations like Hamas, who have committed these atrocities against my people, including women and children. You know, that's what I take issue with. And they have chosen to use civil disobedience. And yes, that means getting arrested and dealing with the consequences.
Eliana, you're the co-chair of Aryeh, a Zionist club on campus. Before the police went in, were you able to walk through campus? Did you engage with the protesters? Did you take a different route to your classes?
I, for the most part, try to make it a point to not inconvenience myself because other people are taking over my campus. I was on campus during absolutely crazy protests. I was yelled at to go back to Poland, F the Jews, and I have no culture. I don't want to go out of my way. But that being said, when it does get to a certain point of danger, I have to avoid it. My parents don't want me here. We made a deal. I'll come back to campus if I don't make stupid decisions. And a lot of that means avoiding campus sometimes.
Melissa, how about you on campus?
I go to the School of Social Work. So the main campus is around the corner. However, I think the biggest impact for me is that I've changed my route in regards to using the trains and the subway. And just how much time I spend, you know, in proximity to the campus, because I've also been yelled at. I've been called a Zionist, which for them is a slur, and I've been called a murderer and a killer, and just had a lot of assumptions made about me simply for wearing hostage dog tags.
When the yelling happens, what do you do?
I just keep walking because I know that's the best way to avoid any, you know, further escalation.
And look, this is a difficult question for me to ask, Melissa, but of course, in America, there is the First Amendment, which means that America has huge protections for freedom of speech. Is there an argument that they are protected under that to say what they want, no matter how uncomfortable that might make you feel?
You know, I mean, I don't pretend to be a First Amendment expert by any means, but there are, in theory, limitations on speech in regards to harassment. And also in these instances, this person was banging a pot that was really loud. So they were eventually asked to stop. But ultimately, there isn't a lot of control going on in this group. So for me, it does feel like they kind of pick and choose some of their enforcement. And I understand it is a difficult situation. And being from the Bay Area, I have a lot of respect for protest culture. But it's definitely been getting more complicated for me, I guess.
And Ariana, do you understand, of course, that there are students who've become protesters who see what's going on in Gaza and who do just want to stand somewhere and say that from their point of view, this is simply unacceptable?
I completely understand that. I think there are real peace movements in Israel and Palestine that are working towards solutions for the approximately 14 million people who live between the river and the sea. Organizations such as Standing Together, the Parents Circle, the Arava Institute, and many, many more. But I think standing and saying that what is happening is unacceptable, but then also supporting Hamas is unacceptable. And I'm not trying to silence anyone. I'm asking people to do better. And I think that it's important to remember with regards to our safety, our feelings on campus, at the end of the day, Columbia is not the center of this conversation. What is happening right now is our hostages. We want them all back. We want hostages that have been taken away from us on October 7th and before that, yeah, such as Avera Mengistu, Hisham El-Sayed, the bodies of Adar Goldin and Oron Shaul. We want them all back. That is what is happening. People in Israel who are being shot rockets from Lebanon, that is what is happening. The humanitarian crisis in Gaza, that is what is happening. Yeah. Not Colombia and not this protest movement that has centered itself in this conversation.
You're all three of you Jewish Americans and students as well. I'm keen for your reflections on what it's like to be Jewish in America at this point in time. Eliana.
Being Jewish in America is a responsibility. It means even though you didn't choose to be Jewish, you have the title thrust upon you and you're responsible for the people around you, for the way other people perceive Jews. Every time you open your mouth to say something, you have the ability to change someone else's perception of the Jewish people. So it's a big responsibility, but it also means it's a challenge we can rise to. I think it causes us to mature more quickly and to see the world as a place that we have a hand in shaping.
I think I agree with what Elian just said. Being Jewish at this time in America has been difficult and painful, but also a source of pride in just seeing how the Jewish community, for the most part, has really come together and supported each other. Definitely the American-Israeli community, which I am a part of. And yes, it has been at times, you know, there's big picture thoughts of like, what does our future look like? How will I protect my children in this climate? I'd never want them to hide any part of their identity. And I have made a choice to go to campus. My heart goes out to my community that does feel unsafe, but I have made a personal choice to feel safe, to continue my routine, to show up to classes, to discuss difficult topics.
Yeah, I think since October 7th especially, but it's always kind of been there on a lot of campuses, is this heavy double standard in which we are, you know, expected to take a side on this issue, to take a firm side. And right now, especially on campus, if you are Jewish and you are not an anti-Zionist, you are viewed very poorly. And it's frustrating too, because a lot of us do have connections to Israel, whether it be friends or family, and that a lot of the people who are making these demands of us to kind of pick a side or, you know, make a statement don't have nearly the background on this conflict that maybe some of us do. I think it's especially harder for Jewish students who don't want to, you know, talk about Zionism or have that be at the center of their focus or their identity, and yet they're kind of forced into these extremes.
In recent months, it has been a time of religious events for each of the major faiths in the conflict. There was the holy month of Ramadan, which Palestinians marked. And of course, you've all recently marked Passover, a time of family reunion and long discussions, I'm sure, at the dinner table. Eliana, what were those discussions like?
We did have a very interesting discussion on a line that in every generation, people will rise up to destroy us. And I asked, based off a class that I have at Columbia, actually, where this discussion was first prompted, whether or not they think that holds us back from being able to make peace with our neighbors if we always think they want to kill us. That prompted a very thoughtful and striking conversation.
My family is in California, so I had kind of like a surrogate family in New York, which was very nice, and I spent Passover with. And similarly, we had conversations around a historical relationship a lot of Jewish people have had with their neighbors and this existential fear. I think it was also nice for us in that we had a spot open, you know, for the hostages. And we had a hostage that is really important to me, Ron Broslovsky, my friend's cousin, there with us. So it was kind of a way to share with Jews across the world and other people, just kind of sitting down and telling the stories as we've done for thousands of years.
You're, of course, students who've got classes to go to. So Eliana has quietly had to hop off the call and head to one of her classes. But we'll continue, Ariana, with you. You're studying social work and your experience of your conversations at Passover.
My Passover involved a lot of little children, so we were very limited in what we could discuss at the Seder. But I spoke to my parents who had their Seder in Israel. This year, it was just them and their three closest friends. They just spent the Seder going around in circle and telling stories of the different hostages instead of doing a traditional Seder.
And of course, I'm sure that being Jewish students, a lot of people will ask you questions about not just Israel, but the policy and the actions of the Israeli government and the Israeli army. And I wonder if you have had any of those encounters in recent months on campus when people are heavily criticizing Israel's military offensive. And it's an offensive which has been criticized not just by pro-Palestinians, but by President Biden and by many of Israel's own allies.
I belong to the left, I guess, of Israeli politics. I have a lot of criticism towards the Netanyahu government, what is happening in Gaza. And it's okay for others in other countries to hold critical views of governments. It's when you're calling for the destruction of a country, that is where I think we have to draw the line.
On a practical note, a class is carrying on for you? Do you have final exams coming up?
Our classes are, for the most part, over. The only exam I had was moved to be remote.
I did have an in-person exam last Thursday.
So what was it like to take that exam under those, you know, very unusual circumstances?
It was tense. You know, there are people in the class that I know they where they stand. And I felt like when I sit down, people were just kind of giving me looks and maybe wanted to move away or something.
Really? You were just sat in your normal seats during the exam?
Long story short, I actually took the exam in a different section than I normally would have. But that doesn't mean I didn't necessarily recognize folks. But that has happened to sometimes where I've sat down and someone got up and walked away.
Is that allowed?
It's not designated seating. Is it frowned upon from a social worker perspective? Probably, yes.
Yeah. I think in general, it's been disappointing for both Melissa and I. It's a place where they should be learning how to come together and disagree from a place of compassion and how to talk in a way that's using nonviolent communication. And this hardline absolutism maximalist ideology is being promoted as a way to move in the world. And that's not preparing students for real life.
Students Ariana, Melissa, and Eliana in New York on their experiences on campus during the demonstrations. I'm James Reynolds. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
The mountains are what keeps me motivated in life.
It's where we get to ask ourselves who we are and who we want to become.
At the turn of this century, five mountaineers set out on individual missions to become the first woman to scale all 14 of the world's 8,000ers. 14 mountains, all above 8,000 meters.
It was about pitting themselves against nature rather than each other.
They knew only one of them would succeed, but whether they liked it or not, it would come to be seen as a race.
Five women vying against each other.
The media needed to find some competition, and they find it.
A race with deadly consequences.
We are just not designed to live in this environment.
Getting down alive was my only goal in that situation.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.